December. We had such a tragic year. As separate as the fingers, suddenly as one. As the hand
all came about. I mean, my focusing on this in this way came about because I was reading Program to Kill, found that I kept thinking about my brother and how he is totally closed to any sort of conspiratorial view of events, the possibility that there is a hidden hand or a hidden agenda, that things are not what they seem. My brother embodies ignorance and denial in a way that no one else I know does. And yet it's a particular kind, because he's not just the middle of the road, stuck in the mud square, who trusts the government. He wouldn't even vote, so he doesn't have the usual vested interest in but believing the status quo. He's pitted against the status quo, which I suppose is the nub of it, the sense that he, because he defines himself in opposition to the status quo, then he needs for the status quo to be what it appears to be, and not to acknowledge that actually it's a bigger psychopath and far more depraved, distorted than he could ever be. That may be part of it, but nonetheless, the basic fact is that for me it represents that part of myself, or any of us, that is totally closed-minded and that believes exactly what it is told. And specifically centers on the idea of conspiracy then, because for the last 20 years I've looked into and researched a conspiratorial view of history and of reality. He has scorned and derided this for an equally long period of time, so this is an area that we've never been able to see eye to eye on, and basically avoided really in discussion. When it does come up, then the same dynamic is always in evidence. So this recently came up like a few months ago. A few months ago we were emailing back and forth and the subject matter of Ted Bundy came up. I don't remember how or why, but he brought up Ted Bundy and expressed a certain degree of admiration for Ted Bundy, and one of the things he cited, besides his general efficiency and how good he was at what he did, was that he had escaped from jail, not once but twice. I responded that maybe he had had help, and that I didn't know about Bundy, but that a lot of what we thought of as serial killers were actually not lone agents, and that were part of a military program. And he replied very shortly that this was just sloppiness on my part, that he'd read 10 Bundy biographies and I didn't know what I was talking about, and It's basically stonewalled, the whole subject. I knew there wasn't much point in arguing specifics with him, so I responded with a more abstract argument about different points of view and stuff. And basically terminated the argument to my satisfaction. He didn't respond to that. So for me, it's been a source of great tension whenever this comes up. So I begin to feel uncomfortable and a bit panicky, and so I'm more than happy to drop the whole subject because it just feels futile. And in a sense it is, to try and convince him that my point of view is more valid than his is futile, because if he has a point to defend, then there are reasons why, and so it won't have anything to do with rational arguments. It's an emotional position that he's taking. Anyway, so I was reading about Ted Bundy today, this morning, and plethora of evidence that he didn't work alone, that he wasn't even responsible for many of the murders, that he was framed, that he had assistance escaping from prison. He was basically railroaded into the role of Ted Bundy. There seems to be very little doubt about this. My brother has said that he didn't see why making a baby suck your cock would have any deleterious effects on that baby. And at the time, although I argued with them again, it was rather weakly, and I didn't want to end up taking a moral position because I knew that would be playing into his hands. And yet I couldn't, obviously I couldn't agree with him, but nor could I quite express or describe the reasons why I knew that that was harmful to a child. Because for one thing, it entails allowing the children pick up on, they're far more open than we are, and they receive all of this unconscious matter that is put upon them by such acts, and that is what is traumatic and wounding, not the physical act itself so much, although that can be too if force is used. But what didn't occur to me until later was, why was my brother arguing this at all? It seemed at the time that he was just using it as an example to be provocative, to argue for amorality and for against the conventional view. But it seems more likely that either something of the kind happened to him, though he may have no memory of it, and or he has done something of the kind himself, and hence was trying to justify it and rationalize it. I did become my brother's ally in amorality. I assumed, just as I was into vampires and darkness and stuff as a teenager, unconsciously adopting that from my brother, those attitudes, even later on, I developed a sort of amoral persona, and anything goes, everything is permitted kind of worldview that was quite nihilistic, even though I was not a nihilist. And this, I think, was also an attempt to match my brother and to be his ally, because that would have been the only safety for me growing up, was to be his ally, go along with his way of being any way I could. So there are many layers of my psyche then, that of my identity, have been constructed around this attempt to match him. And again, they're not necessarily really who I am at all. So it's like I've just been a sort of mouthpiece, even though we disagree a lot later in life. I've never actually really told my brother what I think, because I haven't been able to think it in his presence. Not really. What I think of him, and what I think of his philosophy. It does. There are areas in which I will totally oppose him, and interesting, one of those areas is suicide. His glorification of suicide, his justification of it. And I even flew back to England after my DMT death experience, red pill experience, with the knowing that I needed to be back in England, and it was concern for him that actually pulled me back there, because after my DMT experience I had a vision that night that he had committed suicide. I received a call from my mother, and it was as completely real as any experience in my life, but it didn't happen, it was a dream. But I knew it was a warning, or I took it as a warning, and I did, based on that, decide to go back to England for a visit, and Guatemala, and while there I told him about it, and I got him to unload his loaded gun for a while, and thereby I thought reduced the chances of him just blowing his brains out in a moment of sheer panic or terror in the night, which I think was how I'd kind of envisioned him doing it. But it's very significant, because if my brother disowned his urge to kill by offloading it onto me, then what that left him with was the urge to destroy himself, the suicidal urge. And this, of course, he has enacted in various ways through his crack addiction, through his crucifixion, and so forth. And the year that he was crucified was the year that I turned 33, and it was around the time that I had my own near-death experience, which was an almost fatal car accident, in which I actually only ended up scarring my face and shaking loose my bottom teeth, and it wasn't near fatal in the sense that I ended up in the hospital as a critical case, but it was near fatal in the sense that the kind of accident it was could have easily killed me, and because I came off the road and went actually flying through the air and landed in a dry riverbed and front-ended, and my head hit the steering wheel, and I did experience it as a near-death experience. And anyway, that was tied with my brother's crucifixion, which was also brought about reconciliation between us at that time, which was another time in our lives where we have not been speaking to each other because something I had said had offended him, so he had cut off communications with me, which he's done several times. And second thought he had after falling off the cross and almost dying, his own near-death experience, was that he had wronged me. First thought being that if this is death, then it was okay. At least that's his version of events. And so that accident was when I was 33. That was a result of me going a little bit crazy on my birthday and becoming inflated and acting out a sort of wild, dark sort of energy. I performed Elvis's Trouble, evil, in a bar, and I was wearing my black suit, and after, on the street, a guy who'd been playing bass threw himself on the ground before me and cried, "Hail Satan!" And then shortly after that they had the accident. So this was the beginning of my runaway messianic inflation being the one, etc. I guess it was 2000. And this culminated in my almost killing a cat, which is another story, but the cat did survive, but I came that close to killing it that it seemed that I had actually killed it, and it somehow miraculously pulled itself together, even when I was getting ready to bury it. So that was how close I became to becoming a murderer that time. That's a pretty clear indication that I was being taken over at that time. I understood it in much more esoteric terms as being taken over by Lucifer, and that was a wake-up call for me, that I'd romanticized this idea of Lucifer and being a vessel or an avatar for Lucifer, and kind of conveniently ignored the fact that Lucifer might be the morning star and the bringer of light who was in need of redemption, but there was also a reason why he was associated with Satan, and that there was a whole lot of darkness that came with embodying that role, and that the devil basically was not a nice guy. And so seeing myself acting out this very dark impulses alerted me to something that had been quite obvious to anyone else, but I didn't understand it at all as I'm understanding it now, which was that it was not Lucifer but my brother that was taking me over, that disowned part of him that had been inserted into my psyche like a sort of implant as a means to control me was being activated. And that was right before I went back to England too. Lightning wounds the one that it stops with. So, well, it was Chris Cronk who told me this in the Shooting the Ghost, that he was holding his mother's hand and she was holding on to the water pump, and the water pump got struck by electricity. So the current passed through the water pump, through his mother and into him, and he received the jolt. So whoever the charge stops with is the one who receives the wound. And this is why those who are abused take out that pain and fear and rage onto somebody else whenever they can, because it's a way of passing on that charge, passing on that current, so that it doesn't stop with them, so that they don't receive the wound. So then this is what's happened with my brother. He's passed on this charge to me, and I've been carrying it around, wounded by it, and attempting to pass it on myself, but not knowing how or why. I was driven to get rid of this rage, not knowing where this rage came from. And so for me to now attempt to own up to this and become conscious of it and integrate it, even though it didn't originate with myself, it's an attempt to, well, allow myself to be a receiver and to end that cycle, that current, that wounding, to end it with myself, to not pass it on. For example, to my partner, who I attempt to control in ways that are disturbingly similar to the ways in which my brother attempts to control me. My first experience of my brother was as someone who wanted to kill me for finding favor in our mother's eyes, which is the Cain and Abel story with a new twist. Not the father, but the mother is favoring one of the sons, and the other son, perceiving the unjustness of this, wishes to slay the favored son. So this is an archetypal blueprint which goes all the way back to the Bible and beyond. And I've always known it with my brother, but I haven't understood just how it came about in our own lives. We both are in denial about our childhood. I just don't remember it, whereas he has this rationalization and cover story that he's the same now as he was then, and that nothing that happens to us as children impacts us, and these ridiculous kind of rationalizations that he has, which are just self-contradictory and really incoherent, and yet spoken with such force and conviction that it's impossible to argue with him. But that's his cover story. My cover story is just I don't remember anything. And neither one's going to hold up, because not remembering something doesn't mean that it didn't happen, and it doesn't mean that I can't look at what I do know and put what pieces together that I can gather to create a picture of that time. And so we're talking here about a whole bunch of stuff that is really unpleasant that I don't want to let in, because it will reconfigure my perception of myself, and I will have to see myself as very other than I thought I was, including a lot more imperfect, a lot uglier. And so this is what is so difficult here, is that to really look at the truth of my relationship with my brother begins with acknowledging just how ugly his behavior has been and how distorted and how abusive. And yet, and this is, curiously enough, this is something that my brother reacts against and is very contemptuous of, the whole victim role thing. This is partly, a big part of why he scorns and rejects any notion that our childhood experiences wound us, because of his perception that people use that to play the victim card, and his kind of hooking into the false memory syndrome lie that this is all just self-generated fantasy posing as memory and as a way to play the victim role, etc., etc. So this is something that I'm experiencing now, as I not wanting to turn my brother into the enemy, the bad guy, and thereby casting myself in the role of the good guy, but also the victim. I don't want to be the victim, and I know that painting myself as a good guy is not going to wash, and this simply isn't the truth. There are no good guys, it's just levels of amnesia, levels of forgetting of our own darkness. That's what makes us good in this superficial sense, decent people, is just that we've suppressed and disowned that darkness. So my brother, he embodies that darkness, and he always has. He was here before I was. So how do I see all of that ugliness and distortion in my brother and manage to make it not about him but about myself, and use that seeing to really see something in myself that is equally ugly and distorted, and to own it and to integrate it? And that potentially would set my brother free of this too, although it would be annihilating for him, and he would be feeling awful pressure too of me beginning to integrate this. And I think this is part of why I'm feeling so much despair lately, is as I'm tuning into him, the closer I'm getting to opening to this, the harder and tighter he has to close. So that system is that tension. But that's the very system that I want to get free of, so that I can reclaim my unconscious as my own and not be driven and controlled by another person's disowned matter. That's the step that we all need to take, and that's why this story isn't just my story, it is everybody's story. We've all been programmed to kill.
I long for my home.
The firstborn was Lucifer and Cain. The mythic narrative that is revealed piece by piece and element by element. So the closer I look at my personal history with my brother, the more I see the mythic narrative that I always knew was there, which was Lucifer, Christ, Cain and Abel, and the two of us have acted it out in pretty dramatic, unmistakable ways, such as my brother being crucified and me giving up my inheritance and going to the dark continent to walk the earth, etc. In any number of ways, those being the two most obvious, most kind of pivotal acts that the two of us committed as a way to embody these archetypes. My brother was thrown off the cross because he was not a fit vessel for embodying the Christ archetype. I came off the rails because I was not a fit embodiment for the Lucifer archetype. Because we got them mixed up. We both wanted to be what we were not, and what the other was. It was an unconscious attempt to complete, to be complete unto ourselves, if we could embody the other end of the polarity that the other was embodying, then we would be able to cut free of the other and become a system unto ourselves. Of course it didn't work, because it was an unconscious attempt and not a conscious one. And it's significant that my brother was actually into my being the one, even though he wasn't into just about anything else I did. That, which was the most extreme sort of expression of my paranoid awareness and my delusions of grandeur, things that he scorned and opposed in every other way, when I took it to that extreme, he was all for it, and was even disappointed when I retired as the one. And I found that puzzling, and I thought it was evidence that my brother was actually opening to my existence and allowing me to own my reality. But now I see that the inverse was the case, that he was unconsciously experiencing satisfaction because I was fully taking on his disowned stuff. So I was consolidating this hold he had over me. I was confirming it. I was basically turning into his avatar. I was an avatar for my brother, not for Lucifer. So the mythic narrative of Lucifer is that Lucifer was the firstborn. Lucifer was the first extension of divine consciousness into darkness, into matter. And Lucifer fell. And Lucifer forgot that he was of God and assumed the throne as God in order to lord it over creation, to do which he had to separate himself from creation. Then it was that Christ the Redeemer was sent to have counsel with his brother, to meet his brother in the desert and to overcome the three temptations, and then to assume his ministry of truth, and to be crucified, and etc., etc. So, if this is the myth that my brother and I are acting out in ways conscious and unconscious, then the question that is raised in my mind is, what's the source of this myth? Why is it that this myth is real enough that it can actually become a blueprint, or is a blueprint, for our personal lives? And the answer is not that we are imitating actual beings or gods that have imprinted us with their patterns, so much as that the myths of the gods of Christ and Lucifer pertain to an absolute truth, an eternal reality, which is that of yin and yang, and the innermost and the outermost, the lion and the lamb. I'm an Aries, my brother is a Leo, he's the lion, I'm the lamb, he is Lucifer, I'm Christ. So my brother was the firstborn, and my brother as such was most deeply extended, most deeply immersed in matter, in the environment in which we were both raised, and he became Lord over that reality as the only male, as the male heir. My father being mostly absent and passive and non-upright, my brother began to assume the role, to usurp the position of my father, and the whole Oedipus thing of wanting to slay the father and fuck the mother. He wanted to replace my father in my mother's eyes, and he was successful at that for those first 4 years to a degree, but then when I came along, that was it. He in turn was usurped, and so his murderous rage was then directed at me. The constructed identity is Lucifer that wishes to reign in hell. It is when we extend his consciousness all the way to the outermost and we experience that identification with form and the limitation of form and the security of that, the security of being a fixed identity, of being a fixed point, as in a king on his throne, around which other things revolve, the center of the system. But this is only a momentary thing. The sun is never a fixed point in the heavens. Its sovereignty is only contingent upon constant motion. But if we as consciousness forget this, if we get sufficiently immersed into form or into matter, into our family environment, so that our patterns become deep enough that we actually get locked into these patterns, then that's when the constructed identity comes into being. And what that is an insistence on ourselves existing as apart from the system, just as Lucifer insisted on being God over creation rather than God within creation, rather than the point or fragment of the divine moving through the creation. So when that happens, a natural flow of yin and yang is arrested, because the natural flow of yin and yang is for yin to move into yang and to yang to move back into yin, for formlessness to move into form and for form to return into formlessness. So this is like the ego again, that wants to be perpetually hard, that gets fixed into a rigid hard-on, cannot soften or open, cannot be yin, because it's afraid of powerlessness. It's afraid of giving up what it's achieved through this manifestation in form. And when that happens, the innermost, the yin part of us, has nowhere to move into, because the outermost has taken the throne, does not belong to it. The outermost is there to prepare a space for the innermost to move into, and as soon as it's done so, it moves back into yin, and the innermost occupies that space. So this is what the myth of Christ and Lucifer is about, Lucifer going first into creation and then falling, becoming corrupted, choosing personal sovereignty over service, and then Christ moving in to replace him, which is dependent upon Lucifer actually repenting and seeing the error of his ways and stepping down from the throne, vacating the throne, so that Christ, the good Son, can assume the throne. But of course the danger of that is that Christ will follow in the footsteps of his older brother and become attached to the identity of the King of Peace and wish to lord it over creation and then become Lucifer and so on. So it goes, the yin and yang, the constant flow. So that's the original binary system in each of us. And as physical beings, the binary system that we are born into is that with our mother, which for men is a true yin and yang binary system that is sustained for the period of 9 months in the womb, and then for approximately 2 years after that, when our consciousness is still directly connected to that of the mother, so we don't experience ourselves as fully separate from the mother until around two, when we begin hopefully bonding with the father and experiencing our physicalness and our separate identity through the body, through physical interaction with the father, which is much rougher and more playful and more active, as opposed to the physical nurturing with the mother, where we are subsumed into her beingness. The father, we begin doing, we begin acting as individuals. So in my case, me coming all the way into form was accelerated, was forced, was sabotaged from the start by my being induced at birth through drugs. So drug-induced contractions forced me out of the womb rather than allowing me to come to full term. That was then followed by the hostile reaction of my brother, who was probably the most hands-on male figure in my infancy, seeing as my father wasn't hands-on at all, and my brother's hands were prodding, poking, stabbing, shooting hands. So that caused me to harden prematurely. It's like entering into Lucifer's realm, where Lucifer's law prevails, the law of cruelty, the law of separation, the law of dog-eat-dog and every man for himself. And these are the myths. These are the myths that we uncover just beneath the surface of our personal histories when we begin to actually really see the elements that we've de-emphasized, or forgotten, or ignored. Begin to see the mythic blueprint, the archetypal narrative of our lives, and see that we are living a myth, and that the myth is a map. And it's a map of consciousness, a journey of consciousness. So we're at the stage on that journey where we begin to see that although the map is not the territory is indeed a map, and that what is outside of us, that we're taken to be separate from us, is actually a map of our inner process. And so when we begin to see the elements, the components around us as signs, markers on the path of consciousness from innermost to outermost and back again, then we begin to relate to our external world from a deeper place. We begin to experience our life from the outside, not just from the inside. So when we are able to see ourselves and our lives from outside the constructed identity, from outside of our patterns, then we begin to see those patterns more clearly, and so they begin to dissolve because they have outgrown their use to us. And as they dissolve, then that makes a space for the innermost to move into.
Oh dear. Fuck. Shit. Oh god. What the hell am I doing?
Sometimes it seems like there's nothing that we can do, and that the weight of being is more than we can bear, because the more we understand our process, the harder it becomes to make decisions within that process. And so then, as we begin to see the patterns and the wounds that have shaped us and brought us to this point that we're now at, this point of being able to see all that, one of the things that we see that's primary is that we were driven the whole way. Our actions were not a result of any conscious decisions that we made, and so then the whole idea of making decisions becomes pointless. And so then, why eat? Why get up in the morning? Why shit? Why make love? Why smile? There's a crushing weight of despair that I at least experience as consciousness and my person when I begin to let in the knowing that nothing I do is ever true. It's always a distortion. And so then I make podcasts where I feel like I'm being relatively true compared to what other people are doing or saying or other podcasts are putting out there. Look, this is relatively clean. And then I feel better about myself. And so then my creative process becomes a compulsion, not a desire to feel special so much, but it's very close to that. It's just a desire to feel like what I'm doing has some sort of value, that it's unique and original. Maybe it is, in a certain context, but that's a shallow context, and underneath that surface of novelty is the ancient absolute of yin and yang that we have reduced to a myth, to a story of Lucifer and Christ and of Cain and Abel, which we have then further disowned and unconsciously acted out in our lives. My life is, if it is worth testifying to, if it is worth turning into the fodder of podcast entertainment for others, it's because my life is like a coagulation of this myth into a personal history. It's like those deeps have come to the shallow with me. It doesn't mean that they're not still shallow, they are. It just means that the depths show through the shallow. Because the wounds that have driven me are so deep that they have driven me into near psychopathic modes of behavior, into such extremes. And for my brother also, we've both become these extreme embodiments of a wound. His being the Lucifer wound, mine being the Christ wound. And so for me to reconcile with my brother
which is what this is about in its way, although not at a surface level, because this would alienate him still further, perhaps, were he to hear it or know about it. But for me to bring about reconciliation with my brother within my own psyche, with that part of my psyche that my brother represents, yet also in the process re-owning the part that he's hijacked and stolen from me, that would be a movement within the personal to bring about the final denouement of the Christ-Lucifer conundrum, which is the reconciliation of the opposites, which is the surrender of the outermost, of the constructed identity self, to the innermost, to the beloved, that truth may resume the throne of creation, and creation become at last a manifestation that is true, rather than a distortion of and a defiance of the truth, a reaction against the truth. So I don't know, interpret this as you may, what kind of story I tell this day. Just know that it pertains to each and every one of you, even as it pertains to myself, because we are one psyche confronting its collective shadow and seeing that the dreaded other, after all and all along, was the most desired beloved.
I am young, but I remember it was not so long ago. In a land so bright and shining, this is how the story goes. In the kingdom there was chaos, and the land was filled with fear. There was hatred, there was envy, in between the rich and poor. Child was raised by strangers, loved and fed and taught him well. And when he saw the land in darkness, something changed inside himself. Child was filled with fire, and he led us on to victory, and he seemed so strong and wise. But the big fish eat the small ones, it's the way of history. And although I once came for vengeance, I return in mystery. I return in mystery.